Mr. Speaker.
You're at the intersection of business and politics. This is the 14th and G podcast from Melman Consulting. Now, here's our host, Dean Hinkson.
Thank you for setting your podcast out to 14th and G. I am your host, Dean Hinkson, as the nice man just said. 38 days to go until Election Day 2024. The race is to control the White House, the Senate, and the House of Representatives. I don't think they could be any closer. Trump, Harris, Schumer, McConnell, Johnson and Jeffries, which sounds like a plaintiff's law firm in some small town. Johnson and Jeffries, if you have a phone, you have a lawyer. They're all maneuvering. They're all working to get every possible voter in their camp to the polls, and they're doing that now. Early voting has begun. This election is happening in real time, and we're here in real time. Real time to break it all down, and they don't get any more real than Republican Bruce Melman and Democrat David Thomas. It's 2024 in 24 minutes. Let's go, boys. What you got? Congress skipped town as quickly as they could. Nothing like jet fumes and a hurricane creeping
up. And yet you're
up.
Still looking very dapper, Dean. It's once a Senate chief of staff, always a Senate chief of staff.
It's just as easy to dress nicely as it is to dress poorly.
Amen, brother. We should just end this podcast right here. That's our advice for the day.
Not that difficult. Well, they did punt the government funding quickly into mid-December. They did that in very short order, all on Wednesday. The House got it done, and the Senate took it right up, and they said goodbye. They're headed for the hustings.
They left. They were here for 3 weeks. It was a doozy of a 3 weeks. Very busy, a lot going on. And just like that, they're gone until after the election. And so now that's what we're going to focus on for the next 38 days. Or as I was just checking my phone here, I keep track of a countdown clock. It's a 38 days, 14 hours, 50 minutes, 32 seconds.
You know, I'm not sure that's the right thing. I've plugged in 12025. It's 115 days to inauguration. I'm not coming out of the foxhole until that point.
Well, like I said, though, I mean, my wife and I, we like to get up in the morning and go to our polling place on Election Day on Tuesday and go vote in person. We will do that this year. But a lot of people right here in Virginia, in Pennsylvania, in a lot of other states, they're already casting ballots. And this thing is super close. I'll just sum it up. I think a lot of Nate Silver and the Silver Bulletin
speaks highly of you as well.
But this thing is super tight. Nationally, Vice President Harris has a margin of 2.8 points in his polling average. She leads in Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin by 1.5, 2.3, and 2.2 points, respectively. And Trump has one-ish point leads in North Carolina, Georgia, and Arizona. I'll only point out 2 points is about where Hillary Clinton was in 2016.
Well, look, we've had a lot of polls. We will continue to have a lot of polls over the next 38 days. I would look at the larger trends. I think that is the most important thing to keep an eye on here. 68 days ago is when Joe Biden dropped out, and he was going to get clobbered. I don't think Vice President Harris has had a bad day since. She's gotten not just over every hurdle thrown her way in this unprecedented situation here, but she's soared over them. She clears the field in a day. She
clears the field in a day?
Yes, she did.
Okay.
She did that herself.
Yes. That's we
she
know.
She built that. She built that.
May I keep going here?
I believe she, Speaker Pelosi.
Number two, I suspect next week when they come out with the September fundraising numbers, she will have raised $1 billion over the past 2 months here for her campaign. She had a very successful convention in Chicago and picking Tim Walz that has gone very well. And then she clobbers Donald Trump in the debate. So what do we see the polls where Joe Biden was losing in every state? It's now either tied or a little bit ahead within the margin of error. And if we're going to talk polls, the one that's hot off the shelf that I just looked at this morning was the Morning Consult Bloomberg poll that had her up in every state. Nevada plus 7, Pennsylvania plus 5, Wisconsin plus 3, Michigan plus 3, Arizona plus 3, North Carolina plus 2, and Georgia tied. That is trending in the right way for her, and I don't see any reason why it's not going to continue to move that way over the next 38
Bruce,
days.
Bruce, Trump remains in the poll position here because voters say they want change. They say the country by large numbers is on the wrong track on the economy, on immigration and border policy, inflation. On every issue, Kamala Harris is on the wrong side. She's part of the current administration.
Well, look, as you know, in our Substack, we went through, we think question number one, if you want to win this election, be seen as the candidate of change. Some polls say that's Trump. Other polls say that's Harris. She's a change from Joe Biden. She's a woman of color. That is definitionally change. His change isn't 4 New Years. It's the 4 years before the 4 years. So it's sort of a change asterisk or change light. The polling has her surprising me that she's tightening on who's the candidate of change. She's also tightening on the economy. I tend to still feel like the fundamentals, the macros, it's Trump's to lose. He kind of seems like he's losing it so far. But despite, and I'm not going to disagree with most of what DT said, all of DT's observation of 68 incredibly successful days, she's still only within the margin of error. And as I observe her campaign, it just feels very fragile. It feels still to me like one unscripted interview with a media reporter who's actually going to ask a tough question away from, you know, word salad, yummy, yummy, the honeymoon is over. Now, as you know, DT, I said that when she got announced. I said that after a week. I said that after 30 days. So it's possible she'll keep bowling strikes and end up with a 300 here, but it still feels like in the next couple of weeks, he still might get it together and become a little more disciplined and prosecute a message on immigration, on inflation, and she might get exposed somewhere where she has to, scramble out of the pocket, which is not historically her forte.
So your case is that maybe Donald Trump will become a little bit more disciplined in the next 38 days. I'll take the under.
By the way, I mixed metaphors of bowling and football. Needless to say, I'm not good at either.
This is all every survey, every analyst pollster pretty much has this all coming down to Pennsylvania as literally the keystone state to this election. And Pennsylvania, depending on what you look at, Harris remains within the margin of error. It remains essentially tied in PA. As James Carville famously said, Pennsylvania is a T with Philly on one end, Pittsburgh on the other, and Alabama in the middle.
Well, so what's interesting, Dean, to me, the single biggest question, and I think you sent this to me as a DM when Harry Enten texted or tweeted it, which is in 2016, Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin collectively underestimated the Trump vote by 9 points. In 2020, they collectively underestimated the Trump vote by 5 points. The question is, have they solved for that and her leads are real, or have they not solved for that, in which case her within the margin of error leads are actually potentially behind within the margin of error. That's why I think everybody views this as too close to call, including in Pennsylvania.
It's why we have candidates in Pennsylvania, not just weekly, but I think daily or hourly.
Yeah.
We have candidates darting up to Philadelphia or heading west to Pittsburgh. Pretty stunning. I feel like we had Florida in 2000. We had Georgia 4 years ago. Pennsylvania's the state.
Which, by the way, would then make you wish they weren't such knuckleheads about how and when they count votes. Florida, which, sorry, DT, I know it's too soon, but Florida was not good in 2000, and they got very good.
Yeah, that's right, they weren't good in 2000.
They got very good. Well, again, it was a Democrat who created the butterfly ballot, but boy, are we really getting
537 votes. The
challenge is election night, they will not have finished counting the votes. The legitimate votes that are absentee or that are by mail or overseas troops, because of the way Pennsylvania, how they start and when they start, it's going to take extra time. So we're going to go to bed, as likely as not, where Trump has a lead in Pennsylvania because his people are more likely day of in-person voters like the Hinksons. And the Thomases of Pennsylvania, who voted dutifully by mail already probably, take a couple days to get counted. So part of why I say I'm worried about the 115-day slog is because I don't think we're going to know who won that night. I think we're going to wake up. We're not going to know who won. I think there's going to be some Trump leading, but everything not counted yet, which is – you know, the experts will make predictions based upon where they are and what other returns have come in. There's going to be a lot of uncertainty. I am really worried about the 9-week slog after Election Day.
the slog. And, you know, as we constantly remind folks in our presentations on the election, we don't have a national election. We have 50 individual state elections. Harris is almost certain to win the popular vote on a national basis by a couple of points at least. She's going to run the score up in California. She's going to run the score up in New York. But she's not going to get additional electoral college votes for all those extra votes. So that's why we really focus here on a handful of states.
Yeah, no, it's I know I've mentioned this before here, but I think it's going to be consistent. I don't know if Harris is going to win. I think she will, but she absolutely will win the popular vote. And that is one more election where Democrats will have won the popular vote. Republicans have won the popular vote one time since I've been a voter, 2004. And I am 53 years old. That's a big problem for the Republican Party.
You look fantastic.
Well, thank you.
I believe in federalism. Well, the presidential control of the White House is not the only thing on the ballot. We've also got a super tight fight for control of the United States Senate. I think with West Virginia, given Joe Manchin's retiring there, and Governor Jim Justice is going to be the next senator from West Virginia that puts the Senate at 50-50. The next most likely looks like Senator Tester in Montana is circling the drain with Tim Sheehy, the challenger there, pretty consistently up in the polls. And when you're an incumbent in that position, it's kind of hard to come back once you get down because you've been there. He's been there, what, 12 years now. People know who he is. After that, Ohio looks like the most likely flip, but that's a lot closer. You can go on down Arizona.
Look, I looked through my polling this morning here off Real Clear Politics just to see where everything stood here. And I think, you know, we've been talking about this for 2 years. It's a horrible map for the Dems because not just that they have more senators up than the Republicans, but it's in states that are going to trend towards Republicans, be tough to win. But that said, I like where Dems stand here. And I'll just quickly run through these. Gallego is up 6 in Arizona. Slotkin's up 4.8 in Michigan. In Nevada, Jackie Rosen's up 10 points. That looks like a big fail for the Republicans. In Wisconsin, Tammy Baldwin's up 4.2. And these are averages of all the polls that are out there, just to be clear. Brown is up 3.6 in Ohio. And your buddy Dave McCormick continues to be down 5+ in Pennsylvania, probably because he's from Connecticut. Well, and so that's I don't know what is up with the Pennsylvania Republican Party that they keep nominating people from other states to represent them in the Senate. But I think Bob Casey's coming back.
Don't write old Dave off. He's probably the most talented candidate we've got. Obviously, Pennsylvania's ground zero. The Josh Shapiro machine being there is useful for Democratic candidates. And the fact that the Harris campaign may drop half of that $1 billion in Pennsylvania is useful. I wouldn't write off Michigan. You know, the one that Dems, I'm interested, that they're a little surprised, DT didn't mention Texas, where Colin Allred's putting up a spirited fight. But I always feel like Texas and Ted Cruz for the Democrats, it's like Charlie Brown, Lucy in the football. Democrats are always convinced they're going to get the kick, right? Ted Cruz in the face, and Lucy just pulls the football away. He's tough, so I don't think they're going to pick up Florida. I don't think they're going to pick up Texas. I do think Republicans are going to absolutely pick up West Virginia, but also Montana. Ohio is too close to call. Michigan, Pennsylvania are going to be tight. It's a Republican Senate next year.
Well, I got a sleeper, and I think this may be at the end of the day why Dems do have a chance to keep the Senate is the state of Nebraska.
Nebraska.
Nebraska. You heard it here first, folks. Hit the record button because this is going to get played back to me either way. But there's a guy named Dan Osborne. Not related to Coach Osborne. If he was related to Coach Osborne, I'd call this thing done. But he is running as an independent, and the Democrats are not running anybody in the state of Nebraska. So it is independent Dan Osborne against incumbent Deb Fischer. He has the best ad of the cycle running right now. And polls there, one had him down one, one had him up one. I think when I think about Nebraska, you think of these sort of independent, go against the tide, not following the party line members. We can go through them right now. Ben Sasse was one of those. Bob Kerry was one of those. Ben Nelson was one of those.
I'll go all the way.
Chuck Hagel was one of those. I'll go all the way back to Jim Exon for our elderly listeners here today. I'll tell you what, Dan Osborne feels like he's a lot more like those characters than Deb Fisher is. And so keep your eye on that one.
Yeah. It reminds me a little bit, though, of when Senator Roberts was against my college buddy, Greg Orman, in Kansas. And, you know, Greg is a legitimate independent. He's an actual business guy. He knocked on doors for Reagan when he was a kid. When the NRSC concludes, okay, we got to win this thing, they start dropping ordinance. It may cost money in the same way that Maryland's costing the Dems money they'd rather devote elsewhere. But it's just, she's strong. It's hard to see Fisher losing. I agree with you. The ad is a fantastic ad. But one great ad alone generally doesn't turn a very red state into something else.
I'm glad you brought up Maryland because I do. I will mention right now, Alsa Brooks is over 50%. She's up 11 on Hogan right now. Larry Hogan's not coming to the Senate.
He's still going to get my vote. I'm canceling you out, DT.
I vote early and often.
But Nebraska's a super interesting state because Nebraska is not a winner-take-all state on the Electoral College. They have one congressional district that's going to go D, and Democrats going to get some of those votes, some of those Electoral College votes. And Bruce, that's how your dream scenario of a tied Electoral College could possibly come about.
Well, I'd say nightmare more than dream. 269-269 certainly feels on brand for 2024. You know, the one irony I sort of felt like as Team Trump did all they could to get the state of Nebraska to make a last second change to how they run their election laws, it had echoes of 2020. Didn't the Trump team complain about all the changes that were made in the election year?
Specifically in Pennsylvania.
Right. And if Maine were doing this with their one, because right now Maine and Nebraska sort of offset each other, so it's like that moment in the fight when, you know, two stars who don't want to get punched just kind of both put their arm around the other guy and step back and avoid the melee. It didn't happen because a Nebraska state senator, I think, correctly said, it's like 43 days. I'm not going to change the rules on everybody this close to the election. Let's have a process to think it through.
Yeah, but that's part of the frustration, right? I mean, when Democrats do that in Pennsylvania, it's an exercise in good government. And, you know, when Republicans try it, it's an attack on the institutions of democracy.
I don't think Pennsylvania tried to change the way their electoral votes are given out in the last election, Dean. I think what they did do is made it easier for people to vote during a pandemic. So let's just set the record straight there.
Well, and look, Trump got 7 million more votes in 2020. So give the former president and his 2020 campaign a little bit of credit. They ran up the score bigly, just not quite as bigly as Joe Biden did.
That's correct.
There's too many House races to go through. I mean, just suffice it to say the House elections could not be any tighter. Whichever way this comes out, it's going to be a 5-seat or less majority for the Republicans or the Democrats in 435 individual congressional elections on the ballot. The tail here, I think, House and Senate, and when we do the post-analysis, the money. You're a former general counsel of the National Republican Congressional Campaign Committee. The money disparity here between Republicans and Democrats is just stark.
No, Dems have massively outraised both with small donors and with super PAC money. The money's with the Dems, and that's obviously a huge advantage if you want to get your message out. I tend to still think as goes the White House, so goes the House. You need to pick up net 4 at the moment, and you get the smallest majority of a 1. Dems have 11 in harm's way. Republicans have 15 in harm's way, including 7 in the aggregate in New York and California, which DT likes to point out. But historically, the average coattails for a winning president is plus 13. You need 4. Biden didn't get coattails. In fact, he lost. The last guy to lose was John F. Kennedy before Biden. So anything can happen. And you're right. The money, DT has, I don't say he's crazy for thinking the Dems are going to pick up the House. Even if Trump wins, he's crazy for other reasons.
I think. You know, there's a good chance that we'd have a and Bruce, and you're as our resident historian, has the House and Senate both flipped to the opposite parties ever in a presidential year? So one
never.
Goes one way. Never.
Never.
So once again.
Not since direct election of senators. Right. I haven't seen people going back to look about before, you know, 19, whatever that was, 10 or something.
Yeah. Wow.
And also the House hasn't flipped in a presidential year since 1952.
Then again, we have a lot of firsts here. We've had more than one speaker this season here, and you're right. It's as tight as it's been.
The Sunday Substack is very tempted. I've got like 8 different lists of ideas, but to go with a trivia, where you ask a question, just give it a bunch of space. There's a whole bunch of either firsts or potential firsts or data points that are surprising about this election. So we'll see if it makes it to the Sunday front line.
Well, in many ways, we're in uncharted territory. In many ways, there is nothing new under the sun. As we noted at the top of the program, Congress punted government funding to 5 days before Christmas, which is a tradition a lot like many others. It's something Congress is really good at, of squeezing this government funding deadline right up against Christmas. So when they come back post-election for the lame duck session of this Congress, between the election and the inauguration of the new president and the new Congress, what's left to be done, and what's going to get done?
Bruce, what's left to be done?
Funding, farming, defense, disasters.
Oh, what a lovely alliterative way to
just
put it.
Just rolls right off
which
the tongue here.
Would be really hard, if not concurrent, with fraught leadership elections on the Republican side, very contested. Dems know who their leaders are going to be. And during this, the whole drama at the states about who are their electors, who's been certified, a lot of cases. The Substack last week looked at the Supreme Court, because it's inconceivable that this thing gets to January 20th, 2025 without at least one monumental Supreme Court decision that whoever doesn't win claims is they got robbed.
I agree with you on all that, and that's why I'll take the under for things getting a lot of things getting done during the lame duck. I feel like people are always ambitiously trying to get things done at the end of the year. If we have the House, the Senate flipping sides here, and a White House that's not quite determined at this point, that leads me to think you get an NDAA, you get some sort of funding resolution, whether it's an Omni or a CR, and that may be it. I mean, they may not have the ability to get much more done than that.
Yeah, the funding, obviously, FY 25 funding has to get done. We're almost to the end of the fiscal year. Defense is the National Defense Authorization Act, which is pretty close. I mean, Senate's put their position out. That's pretty close to finishing. The Farm Bill.
They'll punt.
They'll punt that. And then Hurricane Helene, which made landfall last night up through the southeast.
And the Key Bridge and...
We're likely to see some disaster funding from that.
I think that's right. I tell you what, if not everything gets done, we'll be back here in 2025 and tell you all about it here on 14th and G with one extra minute to explain the nonsense. I want to thank you all for listening today. I've now taken over Dean Hinkson's job. I will leave you all with this. This weekend, I want to give a shout out to the people down in Texas. I'm going to come and do my part for Colin Allred by going to the UT Mississippi State game this weekend.
Look
and visiting
you.
My nephews down in Texas. I'm getting on a plane this afternoon. If we can get around that hurricane, I'll be in the stadium saying hook 'em at this time tomorrow.
Well, good luck to you. And as Mr. Thomas so presumptuously said, we will be back before the election one more time to break it all down. Republican Bruce Melman, Democrat David Thomas, thank you guys for joining me on 14th and G.
Thank you, Dean.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to today's podcast, brought to you by the lobbying firm of Melman Consulting. For more, just type 14th and G podcast into your favorite search engine, or look for 14th and G wherever you get your podcasts, and subscribe.
Beam me up, Mr. Speaker.